Jamie Lee Grace. Welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio. Hi, and welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show. I'm Jamie Lee Grace, and a few weeks ago, it was Alcohol Awareness Week in the UK. And it is good to see all the stuff around, because the theme was around work, you know, the workplace. And it's always an interesting one, because over the years since I've been training people to be sober coaches, there's been a lot of the coaches who have really wanted to make an impact in their workplace. You know, they really want to be able to chat to their HR managers, to whoever is you know, making decisions, and offer perhaps webinars or talks, and just make sure that the employers and the HR team are aware of people who choose not to drink. It's never as simple as just mopping up after someone has been signed off work and go to rehab. You know, that's not what we're talking about at all. We're talking about the culture in many workplace settings where actually those people who are choosing not to drink feel excluded, because, you know, the women are expected to keep up with the lads and the networking events and so on and so forth. So it's been interesting to focus on this topic of work and to think about what more can be done by individuals as well in the workplace to try to raise awareness. So I asked a bunch of the sober coaches that I'd trained if they would share some tips or some insights. And then after that, there's a chance to hear an interview with the co-author of a series of books that I've written, Stress to Calm. I'm sure you've heard in interviews that I've done before with Beverly Densham, my co-author. But I thought we'd focus this one specifically around the stress in the workplace, because it's such a big topic that leads so often to people reaching for a drink. There's that direct correlation, you know, between reaching for alcohol after that awful stress in the workplace. Just before I get into any of that, just a quick mention that if, depending on when you're listening to this, I'm going to be part of the Wellness Way Festival with the great Barbara O'Neill, who I'm sure you are very much aware of. Very pleased to be sharing a stage with Barbara O'Neill, as well as Dr. Patrick Holford, Dr. Jenny Goodman on the bill, a whole bunch of amazing people. So I'm going to be speaking at the Wellness Way Festival on Saturday the 9th. It's at Wasing Estate in Berkshire. And you can get tickets for the festival at thewellnesswayfestival.com. And you can get a discount if you type in Jamie Lee Grace 15 at the checkout. So Jamie Lee Grace in capital letters, 15, type that into the checkout, and then you can get 15% off your tickets for the Wellness Way Festival, 8th to the 10th of August. It's going to be really a fantastic occasion. So back to chatting about alcohol in the workplace.
Hi, I'm Lucy. I am a teacher, have been for nearly 20 years now, and one of the things that I found about end of term, or even just typical Friday nights, we've survived to the end of the week, we've survived to Easter, we've survived to the end of the school year gatherings, was that they would always feature alcohol back when I used to drink. And it was likely that colleagues who didn't drink actually just didn't want to attend. And that's a real shame, because it should be such a you know, a moment of communal joy that we've succeeded through another year, another set of exams, another term, helping our pupils. So something I would ask anyone who's in education or any job really is just talk to management about whether you could make celebrations and socializing not about alcohol. Center it around food. Make sure you go to a restaurant with great alcohol-free options. Or could it be about an activity? Could it be something like, you know, going for a walk together, or going to some sort of, you know, physical activity, you know, bowling or axe throwing, I believe, is really popular nowadays, just so that there's another focus that isn't around alcohol, because it really is ostracizing for those who don't drink. Something else I would mention to them is gifting. It would be great if people didn't give bottles of Prosecco and things as a thank you gift. You know, something I'm constantly concerned about is a bottle of Prosecco or wine going to be gifted to me. I would just re-gift it. But, you know, again, it's making an assumption that people enjoy alcohol when many of us don't want to be anywhere near it. And finally, if your company has an employee assistance program, it would be worth asking if it has sober support, sober coaching, or an alcohol support helpline. Those are my top tips. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Vince Hannant, also known as the Exec Sobriety Coach. I've worked in a change consulting capacity for most of my career, and the last 20 years have been at board level. Alcohol is deeply entrenched in business culture, and either entertaining customers, rewarding teams, or perhaps even just coaching situations, meeting people in a bar to talk about performance or project challenges, because it felt disarming and less threatening. It took me a long time to learn that alcohol never helped those personal interactions. I might have felt like it gave courage and created common ground, but the reality is that your professionalism is impaired within 15 minutes of consuming your first mouthful. My guidance now is to go to a coffee shop, not a bar, if you really want to get out of the office environment for a difficult conversation. And when you have no choice but to attend an event where there is alcohol, then, in the early days, just have a plan. Being a designated driver clearly helps. Not many people will talk you out of that. Eventually, if you can achieve sobriety, then in the end, you just own not drinking as your norm. And you'll be surprised at how many people become envious and wish they could follow your lead. They will start to confess that they do not really enjoy how alcohol impairs their performance, thinking and energy. If, despite this, you find that people really put you under pressure to drink, then be clear in your mind that this says more about them than you. And ask yourself, is this the environment you want to be part of? Take control of living your life to the best of your ability, and I've never found alcohol has a part in that.
Hi, I'm Polly, and I work in a high-pressure education setting, supporting pupils with special needs. And like many of us in those environments, I often turn to alcohol to decompress after intense days. It was just part of the culture. Friday drinks, end-of-term parties, you've earned it glasses of wine, and honestly, it just felt normal until it didn't anymore, and I stopped drinking. I began to really question how we were coping, both individually and as a staff community. So as part of our trust wellbeing strategy, I asked if I could create a small info pack for Dry January just to raise awareness. I also offered an optional after-hours session where I shared facts about alcohol and some practical tools to help people explore alcohol-free living. And it was a Zoom with about 20 people on that joined me, and the response was surprisingly positive. A year later, one colleague messaged me to say that they hadn't had a drink since that session. That really blew me away. So here's my tip. If you are alcohol-free or even sober curious, don't be afraid to ask your organisation if they've got anything in place. So you could suggest a different kind of staff outing or ask to share some simple resources that you can just leave in the staff room. Sometimes just starting that conversation plants a seed for someone else, as it did in my case. So spreading the word really matters, even if you do it quietly. So chats about it with colleagues. Some people won't be interested, but it's surprising how many people are looking to make some changes for health reasons. So even if you look at it from that angle, it can really make a difference to changing the culture in our workplaces. Yeah, give it a go. All the best.
Hi, I'm Toby, a sober coach in Switzerland. Back in the mid to late 1990s, gives away my age, I worked at Reuters, where alcohol was, yeah, basically part of the job description. Flying business class across Europe, champagne flowing, business lounges stocked with free drinks. Who could resist? Lavish client dinners, ending, closing the hotel bar. It was all par for the course. Every Friday at 5 p.m., there was an open bar in the office to celebrate the week, and even lunch meetings often ended with a bottle of wine or two. I recall my boss even telling me once I wasn't spending enough on client entertainment during my business trips. Non-alcoholic options weren't even discussed. It was like an extension of university life, in essence. Looking back, it's clear how normalized and pressured that culture was, and may still be today in some places. My tip today, advocate for more inclusive team events and make sure that non-drinkers, whether by choice, faith, or recovery, feel equally welcome and supported. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. So you heard Tony and Toby and Lucy and Polly and Nigel and Vince. Thanks for those. I really appreciate it. As promised then, the Stress to Calm series is out. We have Stress to Calm for lawyers, Stress to Calm for nurses, Stress to Calm for teachers, and there'll be a generic one out soon. So I thought I'd have a chat with Beverly Densham, and you can get all of those books. And really, as we say in this piece, the exercises, the tips, the tools, really anyone can use them. They're available to all.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
So talking about alcohol in the workplace and stress generally, some of you may know that I'm the co-author of a series of books, Stress to Calm in 7 Minutes. And I'm joined by my co-author, Beverly Densham. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here to talk about stress and everything.
Yeah, great to chat to you, Bev. Well, obviously, you've been on the podcast before and, you know, you're no stranger to the Sober Club because you've done stuff for us in the Sober Club. I know you've been sober for, what, about 100 years or something? It's longer than me.
It feels like I've never counted it, but it's definitely over 15 years now. Maybe it's 20. I'm really not sure.
Amazing. Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. And obviously, among the many things you do, angel work, Pilates, I know you've got lots of strings to your bow, but helping people reduce stress, I know, is a very big thing for you. And the books that we did together, Stress to Calm in 7 Minutes. Well, we did a series, didn't we, for different professions. So one for lawyers, one for teachers, one for nurses. But actually, the reality is we can talk generically because this stuff applies to everyone, whatever industry you're in, doesn't it?
It does, to be quite honest. I mean, everybody can use the tools and stress does affect everybody, but not just at work, obviously, but personally as well.
Yeah. So what I thought would be really good to share is because when I was sort of looking into this whole issue of alcohol and work, which is, you know, kind of loosely the theme for Alcohol Awareness Week, of course, it, you know, you can look at it from loads of different angles, but what I remembered really acutely was that when we were doing the research for these books, for each book, we did a survey and we allowed people to chip in anonymously. You know, I can't remember the exact questions we asked them, but I'm sure you'll agree some of the kind of answers that came back were, I mean, actually quite heartbreaking, weren't they? Where do you want to start? Let's start with the nurses one. I mean, I was expecting high levels of stress, but I don't think I was expecting the responses we got. What about you?
I think both of us cried with some of the answers. And yeah. I think because it was anonymous, they could be honest. And yeah, it was just quite upsetting, some of it, really, because, of course, they've gone into the different professions because they're heart-centered, they love it, they want to help people and all of those things. But it's like many of them have forgotten about this themselves within it and have ended up in a sometimes harrowing, you know, exhausted, angry, short fuse, extremely stressed place, you know, and not necessarily going for the healthy coping mechanisms. And
as
you said, turning to things like alcohol in a very negative way, or smoking more, or whatever it might be.
Yeah. I mean, just to quote a couple of the comments that came in, obviously, as I say, there's no names, but one was a registered nurse, 32 years in the NHS, said that she did have a good diet, in her opinion, and good exercise, but she turns to alcohol as a way to cope with the overwhelming pressure and the anxiety that she gets. And several people said they had really poor sleep and were waking up at 4 a.m. or whatever. And then there was another one, that's on our teacher's book, but there's another nurse, isn't there, who actually is happy to be named. Just tell us a bit about Anne, because I know you've spoken to Anne at length, because she's written her own book.
Yeah, Anne Gerling's author of Journey to Chocolate. She was, you know, nurse for a very, 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 very long time. And she was the one I was just talking about a little bit there, that she was, there was the exhaustion. She was very angry. She got completely burnt out. So part of her story is that she completely burnt out. And she admitted to having a short fuse and smoking and drinking alcohol. And there was nothing healthy at all going on, so much so that she did actually leave the profession in the end. And has a new career now, and is now this super healthy, happy, inspired person now. But the person she was then was, you know, she admitted, is a very, very different person.
Yeah. And then we did a book, Stress to Calm for Teachers. So we were looking at, you know, that people within the educational profession. And again, it was right across the board, wasn't it? You know, we had everyone responses from head teachers down to teaching assistants, both private schools and regular schools. But that one, again, that was a shocker for me, because what came across from those surveys was the fact that these pretty much everyone who answered that survey loved working with the kids, and it obviously had an absolute heart for what they were doing. You know, they loved that part of the job, you know, the bit they'd gone into teaching. But everything else got in the way: the red tape, the admin, the what was it? Several of them said, I spend my life sort of on the edge, waiting for the call from Ofsted or whatever. Do you remember those? I mean, the stress levels from the teachers. God, I really wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, and also the exhaustion. The exhaustion really came through a lot as well. And, you know, they were admitting that, you know, the anxiety and stress had got so high that they had seen the doctor and also be on antidepressants. The sleep problem was happening with many of them. And yeah, and some of them admitting, you know, the alcohol, the units increasing, especially at the weekends, but some of them all week long. And they're very aware of that. And they're so exhausted, I think even fatigued, the impression I got, that they just didn't have anything left at the end of the day to want to cook a dinner. And it would be like, you know, it sounded like ready meal time a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's one here who said, I eat poorly. Sugary snacks are a pick me up. Especially when there's no time to eat properly. Another one said, I wake up and think about work in the middle of the night. And in fact, we did an article, didn't we, for an education magazine called The Sunday Scaries, because that's the kind of term coined for how teachers feel than, you know, the night before a new work week. How terrible is that when they absolutely love their job and they've clearly got so much to offer? There's something going wrong, isn't there? And then lawyers, I'm sure everything we're talking about now could equate to every profession. It's just that was what we honed in on. Tell us a bit about lawyers, because you've done some work with lawyers. Tell us about the particular stress that they seem to come under.
Well, we did obviously interview on the survey side of things. I have interviewed them as well on my podcast, but there's so much going on with the lawyers, because there's also different lawyers within law. So the ones who are dealing with family law, all of that side of things, some of them were talking about vicarious trauma and how that sort of the trauma of their clients can also affect them, just literally the people they're wanting to help and are helping or are protecting. That side of the stress came up as well. But also on the other side, it could be their billable hours and the pressure. They some of them were talking about how they're compared to other people within their profession, with their how they're achieving. I get the impression that it's glamorized a lot being a workaholic in that profession, but there are amazing law firms that I've worked with, like Woodstock Legal Services, for example, who look after their team, and I've taught them stress management. And they are wanting the opposite for their team, that they are actually going to cope and hopefully not be turning to the more negative things. But it was actually Anna Illingworth, who I can talk about, who wrote the forward to our book from Robey Morris Solicitors. She inspired the whole thing. This whole thing we wouldn't be talking now if it wasn't for Anna, because Anna was so stressed. Owned her own, law firm and partner and everything. And the stress was getting to her so much that she did reach out for help with the stress with me. And that's when, it was a revelation, and breathing was a game changer for her. And she's kind of turned, she can be in control of her day by purely doing 7 minutes of our stress to calm tools a day. And that led to working with her law firm. And then of course it led to our books, but she's so grateful because she's empowered with a toolbox now that she can tap into to sort herself out when things do get more stressful. But also it's preventative and resilience building when you do it regularly. So Anna is very pivotal in, helped her. And then we've helped her with the book, and then the book for her team and teaching her team at Robey Morris. But these things we can tap into. And so sometimes things happen and you meet someone somewhere and then you help that person, and then it goes on to the books and helping other people, which I think a lot of people, there was a barrister I talked to on my podcast called Malvika, and she did try to take her own life. And we were on a webinar together talking about mental health. She did it from the law side, and I obviously did it from the stress to calm side. So, things can be done to help in each profession and each person. And it's good when we're all speaking out about it, because mental health is so precious. And, luckily, she did get the help that she needed, and now she's being an advocate to help others with their mental health too.
Yeah, sure. So I think, obviously, as you say, we have to take back control and look at what we can do to support ourselves. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. But just briefly, let's just chat just for a moment about the whole, because obviously everything we've been talking about could relate to any profession, and there'll be people listening, who work in completely different professions, and they're thinking to themselves, well, you want to try coming round my gaff on a Friday afternoon? Because that was actually another thing that came out of the survey, was that drinking, even within the workplace, is often actively encouraged. Perhaps it's a Friday afternoon drinks or whatever, and then they wheel the drinks trolley in, or they all go somewhere, and it's expected of you. And I've had lots of female clients over the years who've said they're really uncomfortable that they're seen to be lightweights if they can't keep up with the guys at work events and networking events and all the rest of it. And we know, obviously, that within many workplace situations, people who don't drink alcohol are just left to feel awkward. You have to put a new shell of armor on in many scenarios, which is utterly ridiculous. And yet we know that actually alcohol, you know, people drinking in the workplace or out of the workplace, but then not rocking up for work, is a huge impact on you know, productivity and God knows what. So just before we go on to the kind of some of the tips that we've used in our book to help people manage their own stress, let's just talk briefly about workplace, you know, stress generally, you know, and the whole issue of whether people are drinking to cope. But just looking at the stress, what can people do? What have you seen people do, however small, that can make an impact? I suppose what I'm trying to say is, because of course it's not within my experience, because I don't rock up to a job anywhere, but I'm guessing if I did, you know, I'd want to be able to in some small way try to make a difference. I mean, is it as simple as go to your manager, you know, or your line manager or your HR department and say, okay, there's too much stress here and this is overwhelming, you know? Is it as simple as that? I don't know. Has anything come out of the people you've worked with that you know, is a way of employees making a difference on the workplace stress? That was a hell of a long question. Sorry. Do what you can with that.
Okay. So, of course, some companies do have wellbeing teams, and the making a difference thing, I think definitely, obviously, definitely speak to, you know, the director wellbeing team. What I've noticed is, with most companies, is they are not taking it seriously. They are not doing it regularly. The thing is, stress is like the waves of the sea. There are good times of life, there are challenging times of life, there are sad times of life, and there are different work pressures going on for anyone. Mm. So if you're not supporting your work, you know, your team, you know, every day and regularly, then the support isn't there enough. I mean, there's a very big varying degree of how much support is going on. Some companies, yes, they are doing lots of different, you know, positive things. But I think I also hear that there can be good things in place, but then the excuse from maybe half the team or however many the team is only 25% maybe will turn up when there's something put on. And there's a very, very big excuse. Malvika, who's the barrister, who I know and chatted to, you know, who's the big advocate of mental health, is even her excuse was, I haven't got time. Oh, it gets to 10, 11 o'clock. I'm exhausted. And then I'm scrolling on my phone. And she even wrote a blog saying, Beverly, like, we were on our podcast chat, like, Beverly, like, caught me out and wasn't having any of it about my excuse of, I don't have time. I think most people think it does have to take time, and it doesn't have to take a lot of time. I mean, in the middle of a working day, you can't go off and do your favorite hobby, sport or passion for, you know, whether that's going off for a run every hour because you got stressed, or going for a swim, or going for a long hike, or going sailing. You can't be doing that every hour of the day. It's not practical. And even if you have got hobbies, passions and sports, which is great, it's not enough to keep people going in that working day. So it's finding practical things that they can do for that minute or yeah, 7 minutes. And I think one of the biggest game changers I have noticed is sprinkling those tools, the stress to calm tools, into the day. And the toilet cubicle, bathroom,
becomes your friend, yeah.
Is one of the best.
Exactly.
Places. I mean, if you're in an intense profession like nursing, teaching, there is very little privacy. There's already somebody wanting your attention, you know, and a lot of professions as well, or just generally, or just people got family as well, whatever it might be. Just taking an extra minute for one of my clients, that one extra minute in the bathroom when they expect to go to another meeting, back to back meeting. They're in a financial profession. And I'm talking fast, talking about this person, and then just taking that extra minute, and her day actually didn't change much. But she transformed in how she felt, how empowered she was, stronger, calmer, more resilient, happier, more in control of the day. And things can change and shift just like that in a minute.
So just back on how we can actually make our employers aware of the need for this. I remember one of the people in our survey, I think it was a teacher, saying that they, and you're right, so often things are put in place, but people don't use them. And what came out of our survey was that they're the wrong things they're putting in place so often. They're not actually doable. As you say, they're kind of big things. I remember on the survey, somebody said that their workplace had got some funding or whatever for well-being. So they put on these events, you know, going canoeing or whatever it is. Well, this is a woman with three kids trying to hold down a full-time job. There ain't no way she's going to be going canoeing to relieve her stress. So it's a lovely thought, but not practical for many of the people. I remember a teacher saying that their management team decided to reward, in inverted commas, the staff every Friday afternoon. And the reward was at 3:30, you know, you come to the staff room and you have, you know, cake and whatever it is. But at 3:30 on Friday afternoon, you want to get home, right? So it's just not done in the right way, even though they may mean well. So I think part of this has to be people, you know, the more that we can communicate what we actually need. And as you say, maybe it's more toilet breaks.
It's more toilet breaks, that's everyone. Limited. More toilet breaks, everybody. Take time on your toilet break to not scroll on your phone, but to do something practical for you. But on that note of what you're saying, I taught this amazing school stress management and did a book signing and everything for them. But when was it put on? Loads of the, you know, there's like, I think, well, anyway, massive secondary school. But it was put on after school. So all the ones doing the school run couldn't make it.
Yeah, I was the same. I did something.
It needs to be done. It does need to be done when everybody can attend.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah, I did something for an NHS trust, and it was a lunch hour. I mean, I wouldn't have rocked up to my talk in my lunch hour. I'd have gone and got some fresh air, you know. So, yeah, it is. I'm sure lots of companies mean well, and there's definitely more budget for it now, isn't there? There's definitely people in the right space in terms of the well-being. Although, you know, what we know in the work that I do is that they very rarely want to cover alcohol because that's a bridge too far. Because the managers are all drinking themselves, so they definitely don't want to bring in too much around, alcohol awareness. So that's a tricky one.
I'd like to just pause on that point, because like I've been to a wellbeing event recently, and I was really, I mean, we're talking, everybody's in the wellbeing profession, from psychologists to counsellors to, you know, like myself. And guess what? So I roll up. Would you like a drink? All the drinks that were there on arrival were all alcoholic. They had to go to a separate room to get my drink.
Oh, yeah. Well, we know about that, sure enough.
I mean,
there's one of my sober club members, I always remember her saying she'd started a little mini war at her kids' school because every you know, whatever it is, Easter and Christmas and whatever, they have school raffles and everyone's encouraged to bring bottles of alcohol for the school raffle prizes. And she actually led this whole campaign and said, let's not do that. Let's actually not do that. Let's do something else. Let's do something, you know, that is a reasonable gift, in inverted commas, that does not involve toxic drug. You know, let's do that. And she won her little fight. You know, it was a small win. But those things are important. You know, when people are telling their HR team or their managers where they want to go out for their whatever it is, summer trip or Christmas trip or whatever, make it somewhere where you've got some decent alcohol-free drinks, for God's sake. You know, it's so important. I hope times are changing. I really hope so. But back on the stress then, because obviously the reason we're talking about this is because many of these people who are stressed, whether from the workplace or whatever, the workplace is possibly exacerbating stress, they've already got going on, et cetera, et cetera. Alcohol is seen as a coping mechanism. You know, it just is. And it's legal, and we know that, and everyone does it. So it's seen as the done thing, and then you're expected to do it at work. So because that's the drug that people, you know, reach for, many people see it as the antidote to their stress until, of course, they finally realize it isn't. It's just pushing them further down the, you know, the booze elevator. But let's go back to the stress then. And you know, in the books that we've put together, what we're really saying, I mean, the books are a very simple introduction to some you know, techniques and tools that work. But the most important thing, as you were saying earlier, is they work fast. So we've got a whole chapter on meditation and a whole chapter on breath work and a whole chapter on journaling, but you don't have to levitate for 20 minutes a day or spend hours on this. You really can make a difference with a tiny amount of time. And that's the key, isn't it?
Yeah, I found with the one-to-one programs that I've taught as well, you know, you can work with somebody for quite a short space of time. And even things like sleep can be transformed. You know, I had somebody with insomnia, and just by doing all of this and learning it properly and practicing it daily and incorporating it into their day, including the toilet breaks, standing up, breathing, you know, they haven't got those. They aren't in that overwhelm. They aren't in that, you know, struggling to sleep and waking in the night and being awake for hours and just being a complete stress head, really. They're loving and living life again. And, you know, it doesn't have to, as you say, it can work fast and it doesn't have to take a lot of time.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is about finding ways to bring us, just to bring ourselves back to balance, just to remember, you know, whatever you've got going on, however, you know, scary the court case feels, however much paperwork you've got, however, you know, whatever is going on, if you're safe in the moment, obviously, if you're not, you need to leg it. But if you're safe in the moment, there will always be something you can do that just brings you back to balance in that moment. And when we can get into the habit of doing those things regularly, as you say, if necessary, go to the loo, then that's going to make just a massive difference, a massive difference. I know, you know, years ago, certainly when I was drinking, I'd often get into kind of panic mode. I could feel myself right on the edge of going into absolute overwhelm, you know, and panic. I've had lots of clients who've had burnout, which is, I'm sure you've come across many people who've had burnout. It's an interesting thing, because afterwards, I've asked several clients, looking back, can you see what happened now? I bet you've had that question with people. It's a really interesting one, isn't it? Because they nearly always say, well, looking back, yes, I can see that I wasn't taking care of myself. I wasn't eating properly. X and Y. I can see that I was on that sort of treadmill. In fact, I almost knew it was coming and still I carried on. Have you had people say that?
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is in the head. And then they're not looking after the body either.
Exactly.
Like, it's just, they're just so, like, it's just so overwhelming in the head that they can't see the wood through the trees, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a scary thing.
And one client found me. I was bitten by, it's not really bad, but it wasn't nice. I was bitten by a dog on New Year's Eve, and somebody was really kind to me, and, you know, afterwards, and I did have to go to medical help. But anyway, they discovered that I taught breathing and the stress to calm tools. And that was their turning point, me being bitten by the dog, finding out she was telling me to breathe, which was quite funny. I said, that's quite fun. Even that, in between me shaking and being in shock, I was, I said to her, funnily enough, thank you so much for helping me breathe, but I actually teach breathing. But if you are in shock or something like that, some of your, you know, logicalness will go out the window. But because of that, sometimes you need something, listen to this podcast or whatever it might be, something to just make like a light switch to make that change. And for her, it's me being bitten by a dog, her helping me, finding out I teach breathing and stress to calm, and that turned around her whole overwhelm and burnout that was going on.
Yeah, so let's just share one or two of the tips from the book then, because I think what's really good about focusing on ways of reducing stress is that in so doing, you know, you're going to help yourself find ways of not reaching for the drink, you know, because we know, don't we? It's the, you know, so what are the thoughts that are coming in? What's the kind of panic feeling? It's like, oh my God, I need to escape in this moment. You know, what do? I reach for a drink, because that's what I've always done. So if we can kind of put that pause in and just help people remember, okay, so when you start to feel stressed, overwhelmed, panicky, whatever it might be, put that pause in. And even if you can only take 1 minute, you know, there's a, there are things you can do. So, I mean, well, let's start with the breath. Let's share. Do you want to just share one really simple breathing technique, a really simple one that anyone can remember?
Yeah. So just literally sitting, standing, lying down, eyes open, eyes closed, walking, however you like. A lot of people find eyes closed is good, but, you know, you can do eyes open as well. Just good posture, close your eyes and just breathing in, just nice, slow breathing in through your nose and then out through your mouth. And just keep that going for a minute, relaxing more on each out breath and just scanning through your body. And relaxing more on each out breath. And once you've done that for 1 minute, then off you go again. And you can do that standing in the toilet too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And there's the kind of box breathing exercise that a lot of people are aware of as well, which can be quite useful, where you're literally just sort of visualizing yourself going up the side and along the top of a box.
That one's used a lot by psychologists and therapists, and NHS recommend it too. But I do find that I teach more triangle breathing, which I find a higher success rate with it, because a lot of people find box breathing really hard. With triangle breathing, you breathe in for four, hold your breath for four, and then exhale for four, and then off you go again.
Yes, it's simpler.
It's simpler, and a lot of people don't. The other version, a lot of people find too hard and just give up, whereas with triangle breathing, a lot of people find, oh, that's actually quite comfortable. You might need an extra breath in between. That's absolutely fine. But you can do that sitting, standing, lying down, walking. And even like firefighters in America are using that type of breathing on a shift, as well as after, to recover physically and mentally. And if you want to be on the ball or you get stressed, do a bit of one of those breathing techniques or both of them.
Yeah, fantastic. Do you want to share one other of the tips that's in the book, something really simple, you know, that people can do without needing to do an awful lot of practice?
Oh, there's so many. There's the stretching, there's the journaling, there's positive affirmations.
Yeah, let's talk about journaling, because, you know, again, in the book we've got a whole chapter on the power of journaling and how if you can take some time to do sort of 3 or 4 pages, you know, as Julia Cameron would call it, morning pages, it's brilliant for if you're in the early weeks of quitting alcohol. You know, I recommend it to everyone. It's an amazing thing to do. Just literally stream of consciousness, let it all out, better out than in, let it all go. Yeah. But what we've got in the book is a simpler way of just narrowing it down to literally 1 minute. So just remind us how it works.
Yeah. So we've got a list of affirmations you can choose. I've actually chosen one from my deck of affirmation cards. I chose the exercise one today. So how to journal in 1 minute, either pick an affirmation, make up an affirmation, pick an affirmation from our book or from a deck of cards, shuffle, fan them out, pick a card. So today I went for I enjoy exercise. And then what you do, I love to walk, swim or enjoy my favorite hobby. You write that down with your pen and your notebook. And then for 1 minute, you write down what that actually means to you today. And you can set a timer if you want on your marks, get set, go. If you want to do it for longer, you can. And it's amazing how much can come out in 1 minute. And there is research and science behind each of the tools, including journaling, which is amazing for mental health, reducing stress, reducing anxiety, but also it's inspirational solution finding, so many things, expressing how you feel. That's how to do it in 1 minute.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's important to stress that if you can use a pen and paper, as you say, it's really good for the cognitive brain. If you really can't write, then you can use a voice note. But it does help if you can actually use a pen and write it. Because bear in mind, you know, you don't have to have good handwriting or anything. You're not necessarily going to ever look at it again or go back and edit it. It's the process of getting it out. And I know that for me in the early weeks of quitting alcohol, when I felt really, really shaky and raw and vulnerable, and I had no bloody idea who I was. I'd lost any sense of identity. I just didn't know who I was. Journaling was unbelievably helpful, even though there were many, many days when I would simply write a load of old waffle, and or maybe I'd find myself writing, I don't know what to write. I'm not thinking anything. And this is annoying. But over time, it was very interesting how when I'd perhaps go for a walk, I would think back to something I'd written down, and it's as if the answer would appear if it was a problem. You know, it's so powerful.
It's absolutely amazing. It's become a complete passion of my own in my personal life, and it's every time I teach it, I find it quite exciting, I have to say.
Yeah, totally. So anyways, You know, they're just two of the, you know, we obviously we go into a lot more depth, but the books are Stress to Calm in 7 minutes for lawyers. And then there's one for teachers and there's one for nurses. And hopefully we're going to do a generic one soon. But actually, you know, the reality is anyone can use any of them because the tools work for you, whatever you're doing. So is there anything else you'd like to share, Beb, just in relation to sort of stress in the workplace?
I would just like to say, give yourself permission to take 1 minute. And if you want to really shift and improve things and feel happier and better in your mental health and feel fantastic, treat yourself, sprinkle in 7 minutes.
Yeah, do the full seven.
Do the seven all in a row. If you're very stressed, do seven in a row. You can treat yourself to seven anyway and sprinkle 7 minutes into your day. Is amazing. And don't forget the tip of doing one of those tips when you're in the bathroom.
Yeah, absolutely. There's going to be bosses and managers listening all over the country thinking, what the hell are they on about? Everyone's going to be asking to go to the loo. Well, not that you should have to ask, but you know what I mean. It's a good tip. Beb, just tell us where we can find your work.
You can find my work at mindfulnesspilates.com and I'm Beverly Densham everywhere on social media.
Brilliant. Thank you, Bev. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden. Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So just a reminder, those books, Stress to Calm in 7 minutes, are available on Amazon, or please just drop me a message if you'd like to chat about anything in your workplace. And a reminder of the Wellness Way Festival with Barbara O'Neill. I'm going to be speaking on Saturday the 9th, and you can get discounted weekend tickets if you type Janie Lee Grace 15, that's Janie Lee Grace in capitals, in the checkout at the wellnesswayfestival.com. Be fantastic to see you there.
You've been listening to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.